times. We all know that. We also live in really pretty amazing times as well. It's pretty amazing that yesterday I was 450 miles away preaching, and that you can do that is really a pretty amazing thing today, that we have those ways of traveling. We do appreciate your prayers. So we were in West Virginia, had very good services, enjoyable services. I'd like today to turn to the book of Daniel, chapter 6, and also the book of Nehemiah, chapter 1. In Daniel, we'll read verses 10 and 11. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, his windows being open in the chamber toward Jerusalem. He kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Nehemiah chapter 1, begin reading with verse 4, down through verse 6. It came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept, and mourned certain days, and fasted, and prayed before the God of heaven, and said, I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God, that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him, and observe his commandments. Let thine ear be attentive, and thine eyes be open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee now day and night, for the children of Israel, thy servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee. Both I and my father's house have sinned. Chapter 2, verse 4. Then the king said unto me, for what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven. Chronologically, the book of Daniel occurs before the book of Nehemiah. And that is why we read Daniel first. By way of background, the book of Daniel opens in chapter 1 and verse 1 with Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, conquering the southern kingdom of Judah during the reign of Jehoiakim. Again, we've said this many times, but according to 2 Kings 24 and 14, 10,000 of the most promising of the people were carried off into Babylonian captivity. We see in addition in chapter 1, verse 2, to these individuals being carried off, that the temple had been raided and ransacked, and the vessels of the temple were taken and placed in the house of the gods of Nebuchadnezzar, the gods of Babylon. We read in 2 Chronicles 36, and they burnt the house of God. So the house of God, the temple, was ransacked, and then it was destroyed. Those who were carried away into captivity, were in captivity for 70 years. And the book of Daniel records some of the events of that captivity. Leading up to the book of Nehemiah, the power of Babylon had been broken by the Persian Empire. And God stirred the heart of Cyrus, the king of Persia. And he encouraged the Jews that were in captivity to return to their homeland. And from Ezra chapter 2, we see that some 50,000 returned. And they began the immense task of rebuilding the temple. But they would be discouraged by the opposition from the people who had settled in their homeland during the captivity. And as a result of their discouragement, they would abandon the work of rebuilding the temple, with only the foundation of the temple being rebuilt. About 16 years later, these Jews who had rebuilt their houses and really were now quite comfortable in their lives. The only thing is the only thing of the temple is the foundation. God raised up two men by the names of Haggai and Zechariah. And these two men were to challenge the people concerning their way of life. And they were to point out the neglect of the things of God. Here was a people, they had rebuilt their houses, but the only thing there was the foundation of the temple. That work had ceased. And God used the ministry of Haggai and Zechariah to convict these Jews and to inspire the people to again start the work to rebuild the temple. This was about 20 years after the people had returned. About 60 years later, another group of Jews returned to their homeland under the leadership of Ezra. And they found that the people were in a state of spiritual and moral degradation due to the fact that they had intermarried with the unbelievers of the surrounding nations, and they were now caught up in all their pagan lifestyles. So now Ezra, the temple's been rebuilt, but now Ezra sets about to reestablish the moral and spiritual life of the people. And he, of course, would meet with opposition on every hand. So by the time we get to the book of Nehemiah, about 90 years have passed since the first group of Jews were allowed to return to their homeland. And the walls of Jerusalem, 90 years later, are still in shambles. Nehemiah was in the palace of the king of Persia. He was serving as the king's cupbearer. We read in chapter 1, verses 2 and 3 of Nehemiah that some men from Judah came to Shushan, and Nehemiah asked them concerning the people in Jerusalem. He basically said, how are things going? How are things going back home? And they reported to me and Nehemiah basically that things are a mess. Nehemiah would eventually be given leave by the king of Persia to go to Jerusalem. And then he, of course, would lead the enormous task of rebuilding the walls. And the book of Nehemiah records the rebuilding. But in this message, we want to notice from our text verses a habit of these two men, Daniel and Nehemiah, a habit that they had in very trying times. And they serve as an example. They serve as an encouragement to you and I, the day in which we live. In Daniel 6, verses 10 and 11, we read of Daniel. By this time, captivity has been going on close to 60 years. He kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. In Nehemiah chapter 1 and verse 4, Nehemiah says, I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. And in verse 6, he said, I pray before thee now, day and night. And in chapter 2 and verse 4, we hear him say, "So I prayed to the God of heaven." So I want to speak this morning on our posture and practice in trying and wicked times. I want to look at, first of all, at the example of Daniel and Nehemiah. We see their posture. In Daniel chapter 10, again, Daniel is seen kneeled upon his knees. You'll notice in verse 10 and 11 that it is twice stated that he did so before his God. So we get a picture of a man upon his knees in the very presence of God. That's a very moving picture. In Nehemiah 1 and verse 4 and verse 6, Nehemiah is seen sitting. But again, notice it is before the God of heaven. Speaking of the fact that he's in the very presence of God. Again, a very moving picture. Kneeling and sitting before God. In both cases, there was a personal awareness of God. You cannot sit before God and not be personally aware. In both cases, there is a realization of God's absolute sovereignty, His greatness, His authority and power. In both cases, there is a belief and there is trust in God. A personal assurance and a persuasion that God was righteous, that God was gracious, that God was merciful, that God was loving, that God was caring and faithful, all sufficient, and that He was the emancipator and the only hope of the people. Both of these men were absolutely persuaded of this. And I don't believe that most of God's people are persuaded of that truth. Because if they were, they would be doing things differently. In both cases, there is a realization of personal weakness and need. In both cases, there is a heavy, heavy burden. In both cases, they are focused upon God. They're seeking God. They're drawing near to God. In both cases, again, they are in the very presence of the Lord. And in both cases, both men are in a place of submission before God. And they are in communion with God. They are in fellowship with God. They have a contact with God. Now notice what they're doing. In Daniel 6 and verse 10, we read of Daniel that he prayed and gave thanks. In verse 11, we see him praying and making supplication. Nehemiah 1 and verse 4, it is said of Nehemiah that he wept, that he mourned, that he fasted and prayed. And may I say, to fast is to make arrangement to pray. It's to rearrange your schedule to pray. You rearrange your eating time to pray. He fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Chapter 2 and verse 4, we read, "So I prayed." They both prayed from heavy hearts. They both prayed from burdened hearts. Hearts that were filled with love concern and passion. They were praying men, Daniel and Nehemiah. We need to be a praying people. We ought to be more of a praying people each and every day. I don't understand how living in these times, it seems like God's people pray less. You have to wonder. But we see both Daniel and Nehemiah before God in prayer. This is where these two men found strength. This is where they found help. This is where a peace of God came over them. This is where they obtained assurance and relief and comfort and guidance and instruction. This is where they found wisdom. This is where they found hope. Praying before God. Notice that this was their life. Daniel 6 and verse 10. Daniel kneeled upon his knees three times a day. And he prayed. And he gave thanks before his God, as he did aforetime. This was his habit. This was his life. He's living in Babylon. He's a captive. And it was his habit to pray, to kneel before his God. Nehemiah 1 and verse 4, Nehemiah is seen in prayer. And it said he was in prayer certain days. And by comparing chapter 1 and verse 1 with chapter 2 and verse 1, you find out that that was 4 months. For 4 months, Nehemiah would meet with God and pray. Chapter 1 and verse 6 of Nehemiah, notice how he did this. I prayed before thee now day and night. For 4 months, Nehemiah prayed before God day and night with a heavy and burdened heart. And then in chapter 2 and verse 4, Nehemiah says, just as a matter of course, so I prayed. So I prayed. So in both cases, Daniel and Nehemiah, prayer is what they did. That's what they did. It was their routine. It was their norm. This wasn't something special. This is simply what they did. They had an impulse to pray. They had an instinct to pray. In both cases, no doubt, because they both lived in trying times, they had to persevere in prayer. The lives of Daniel and Nehemiah were marked by prayer. How much are our lives marked by prayer? How much is that our habit? How much of our life is praying? Consider the circumstances under which they prayed. Daniel chapter 6. It has been 60 plus years since the captivity. Things have changed. Babylon has now been conquered. Captivity is still going on. But Babylon has been conquered. And now Darius is over the kingdom. And he's seen in verses 1 through 3 of chapter 6. organizing his government. And he had noticed that there was an excellent spirit in Daniel. So he thought that he would set Daniel over the whole realm. Well, this enraged the other government leaders. And they, in verses 4 and 5, sought to bring Daniel down. Knowing Daniel's connection to and association with God, and knowing that Daniel was a man of prayer, they persuaded Darius to pass a law, to pass a decree. We see this in verse 6, 7, and 9. That would be against the law to pray. For 60 plus years, it has been the habit of Daniel to pray. And knowing now that a law had been passed, we find Daniel in a room. The windows are open toward Jerusalem, some 800 miles away. And he's upon his knees in the presence of God praying, just as he always had. Daniel lived in a time when God's judgment was upon the people because of sin. It was a time of fierce opposition to God and his ways. He was in a situation that he would have never chosen. He is living in the very midst of enemies and haters of God. He's living in a system of paganism, a system of wickedness, a system of abomination. Idolatry and immorality is on every hand. He's living in a very difficult time. He's surrounded by heathen worship. Heathen images are everywhere. Everywhere he turns are the ways of the heathen and the talk of the heathen. Blasphemy. He's bombarded the heathen ways and philosophies. And in Babylon, there's an all-out effort to bring down these captives, to get them to accept and to get them to embrace the ways of Babylon. Daniel lived in a time when it was the goal to brainwash and to re-educate and to transform God's people into Babylonians. And many of them were transformed. Because by the time you come to the end of the captivity, many of them didn't want to go back. They enjoyed Babylon. That's where we are today. We live in Babylonian captivity. And many of God's people, if they were given the opportunity to go back, they wouldn't. Because they become comfortable with the ways of Babylon. These were the times in which Daniel lived. But in the midst of all of this, it was his life to draw near to God with a heavy and burdened heart, and to kneel before God and to pour out his heart in prayer to God. Now in Nehemiah hears the report there in chapter 1 and verse 3 concerning Jerusalem, that they are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. In other words, the wall and the gates are in the same condition in which Nebuchadnezzar had left them. Concerning this, in chapter 2 and verse 17, we read, Jerusalem lieth waste. And in chapter 4 and verse 2, the enemy is speaking, and they say, will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned? In chapter 4 and verse 10, we read of much rubbish. So scattered and strewn about is broken rock, splinters of charred wood. It is a picture of disaster. It is a picture of destruction. Nehemiah leading the people to rebuild those walls. And everywhere they turn, there's absolute ruin. There's debris everywhere. Mere fragments of what was once very beautiful. Sounds very familiar. An absolute mess. Total disarray. And we find Nehemiah drawing near to God, in the presence of God, praying. So what we see in the circumstances of Daniel and Nehemiah, we see Babylonian captivity, and we see ruins. What we see is the disastrous results of life lived apart from God. What we see is a picture of our own situation today. So we want to make application to ourselves. We, like Daniel, live in a day of fierce opposition. A day of satanic agenda. A day when the agenda of Satan is promoted and advanced. Promoted and advanced today is the beliefs, the convictions, the views, and the feelings, and the attitudes of those who are being prepared for the reign and rule of the Antichrist. Those who are offended and hostile toward God. We live in a society that has and continually defiantly turns its back upon God. And every day turns its face toward hell and marches in that direction. And unless we're marching in the same direction, we're going to be noticed. And the reason many of God's people are not noticed is because they're marching in the same direction as the world. They've become Babylonians. So here we are, in a society that has turned its back on God, marching in the direction of hell. We've degenerated into a godless society. It almost makes me ill when I hear someone say that America's a Christian nation. I don't know where you've been living, but it hadn't been here. I don't know where your head is. This is not a Christian nation. It hasn't been for a long, long time. We have degenerated into a godless society, where our values, and I say our, I mean society as a whole, are determined by Hollywood, pop culture, and academia, and mainstream media. And therefore, we're plummeting each day into the abyss of humanism and secularism. So here we are in our own Babylonian captivity, a place where immorality is exalted. And even some who profess to be God's people. Well, I don't see anything wrong with it. you're a Babylonian. Please quit identifying yourself as a child of God. You are a Babylonian. And I just wish that God's people who are now Babylonians would come out and say, I am a Babylonian. You cannot depend on me. I like it here. Oh, that they would be that honest. Here we are in a society mired in and entangled with and imprisoned by the ways and the attitudes of Babylon. Surrounded by a people, intoxicated with the influence of the governing power and the spirit of Antichrist, with their lives driven and shaped by the spirit of Antichrist, absolutely spellbound by modern day sorcery. And again, sadly and tragically, many who profess to be God's people have become consumed and entangled in the ways of Babylon. So influenced by the godless philosophies and pursuits of Babylon that recreation and entertainment and school and careers is more of a priority than the Lord. Again, those who put more importance on recreation than the Lord, more importance on entertainment, school, or careers than the Lord, please stand up and say, I'm a Babylonian. You cannot depend on me. We already know we can't. But I just pray that some would come to their own realization. Their lives are filled with the clutter of an Antichrist world. And in order to serve God, they got to get through all that clutter. And guess what? It's not happening. It takes too much work. And they've become content with a mere form of godliness. We live in a time where the poison of hell is everywhere. And we're all in danger. Poison of hell is in the air. And your children breathe that air. And your grandchildren breathe that air. We're all in danger. We live in times that are absolutely lethal and devastating to biblical spirituality. We are under satanic attack, surrounded on all sides. Your children, your grandchildren, your family, your friends, your acquaintances, many have already been brought under the debilitating control of a society that has gone mad. They're already sick and they're dying from the poison that's all around them. We're all in danger. But there's Daniel, Babylonian times, on his knees before God, praying. Also, like Nehemiah, we live in a time of ruin and destruction. Everywhere we turn, there is that which is broken. There is that which is shattered. You look at your children, and many of their lives are broken and shattered. We live in a time of upheaval and chaos. We live in a time of misery, distress, insurmountable problems, and needs. And like Daniel and Nehemiah, May we realize that there is a God in heaven. Again, many of your children have breathed in the poison of hell. Their lives are shattered. But there is a God in heaven. And He is above all. And He is over all. And He reigns supreme. And He is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we may ask or think. May we realize that He is God in the day, and that He is God in the night. He is God in times of strength, and He is God in times of weakness. He is God in times of rest, and He is God in times of weariness. He is God in times of provision, and He is God in times of poverty. He is God in times of fulfillment, and He is God in times of disappointment. He is God in times of victory, and He is God in times of defeat. He is God in times of great joy, and He is God in times of great sorrow. And like Daniel and Nehemiah, may it be our impulse to draw near to God, to get in the presence of God every single day and pray on our knees before God, taking our place before Him. Many of God's people today are so ignorant, so duped by Babylonian thinking, that rather than praying, they think a new government will help. You better wake up. God's people need to be a praying people. Praying people. Pouring out our hearts to Him in prayer. Oh, may this be us. He kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. I'll give you some advice. Take it or leave it. But rather than lecturing your grown children, get on your knees before God and pray that God would get a hold of their hearts. This needs to be our life. Nehemiah fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Again, he was willing to rearrange his life to make time for prayer. It's amazing to me how that a parent who knows the Lord can have a child that has breathed in the poison of hell, and they are dying, and they are going down in ruins, and they just carry on as if nothing has happened. Oh, they'll tell you they're concerned. But they're not. Are you concerned enough to get on your knees before God? Are you concerned enough to take the day off of work and get on your knees before God and pray? Well, I've got to go to work. You're caught up in the Babylonianism. Sometimes it's more important to pray. Prayer needs to take precedence. Need to pray. Need to be a people of prayer. Willing to rearrange our life in order to pray. We know one thing for sure, there aren't too many people willing to rearrange anything in their life for the Lord. That is the truth. That may anger some folks, but it's true. If it angers you, you're the ones that are guilty. For decades, in America, there has been a cultural war. An all-out assault upon biblical values. And may I say this, the culture war has been lost. It's already been lost. We live in Babylon. And we need to be a praying people. Because there is a miracle working God. Amen. Don't be given in. Don't be given to anxiety and fear. Pray. Don't be given over to despair. Pray. Don't be given over to discouragement. We don't have time to be discouraged. Too much is at stake. Rather than being discouraged, pray. Don't live lives of defeat. Pray. Don't give up. Pray. Again, it was the impulse of Daniel and Nehemiah to pray. May it be, may we have the compulsion to pray. We live in a time of fierce opposition. And like Nehemiah, a time of great devastation. So may this be us. He kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks as he did aforetime. Whereas Nehemiah fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Whereas Nehemiah said in Nehemiah 2 and verse 4, so I prayed. That ought to always be our response. So I prayed. So I prayed. We need to be a praying people. But really, for the most part, it's pretty obvious that many of God's people are not a praying people. They're a worrying people. We're not praying people. We need to be praying people. Especially the days in which we live. Because that's where we find strength. It's where we find hope, assurance, to get into the presence of God and get on our knees and pray. There isn't anyone here today that does not have burdens. The question is, what do we do with those burdens? How do we react to those burdens? It ought to be, so I prayed. It ought to be kneeling on our knees before God in prayer. We have concern for children. We have concern for grandchildren. We have concern for friends and acquaintances. We ought to be on our knees praying. We all need miracles in our lives, in the lives of our loved ones. We ought to be on our knees praying. Before God. Oh, what my son does, what my daughter does, what my grandchildren do, oh, it makes me so angry I can't even see straight. Well, rather than that, get on your knees and pray. Because all your anger isn't going to do you any good and isn't going to do them any good. But get on your knees and pray. Oh, that we would be a praying people. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us verse song. Let's all stand.